You know, when you're an adolescence or you've got stuff like that that's happening in the younger part of life, I mean, it's very stressful. It can be a crisis point. And it can also be a crisis point when you get to be, you know, 20-something or 30-something and you think, this is what I'm supposed to be making my mark in the world. And you go, I don't know that I'm making all that much of a mark. I'm having a lot of what we talked about in week one, bios, the word for love. There's a lot of, or word for life, there's a lot of activity happening in my life and I'm going a lot of things and things are happening. But still, there's this inner thing inside of me. I'm not feeling I have life. I'm not feeling I have this inner fulfillment, this inner flourishing, this sense of contentment and growth that surpasses the situation I'm in right now. Sometimes in your 20s or 30s, you start to feel like, oh man, I thought I'd be further along than I am right now. And then maybe the crisis is when we get to midlife. You know, I've been accused of being in midlife, a midlife crisis, because, you know, whenever someone starts talking about a Harley Davidson, they're always accused of being in midlife crisis, you know. If it's not that, it's definitely been because I'm considering getting a tattoo. I am, you know, those of you who know me know I've always said by the way, how many of us have tattoos in here? How many people? Interesting. This is the older crowd. You wait till tomorrow. I'm serious. It'll be like half, you know. The thing about tattoos for me is up to this point, I haven't been able to figure out what I would want permanently etched on my body. You know, you put on there and you go, I love Liz, and then she breaks your heart and you got Liz carrying around with you the whole time or something like that. I just haven't been able to figure that out. And so I think I figured it out though. And I'm not saying I'm going to have the guts to actually follow through on it, but this, if I was going to get a tattoo, this is what it would be right here. This is actually something I sketched out on my prayer journal. When I was on my study break this last summer, it happened because I was driving down and I got a phone call. And as I answered the phone, I got this person who was very irate with a ball that I had dropped. They were giving me truth. They were truthfully telling me about a ball that I had dropped. It was a very difficult conversation. And I went down and I was just trying to process through, okay, you know, in a situation like that, what's best, to just give truth? Or to defend yourself, or to give deference, and to give honor, and to give patience. And I stumbled across in the book of John, which is what we're dealing with in this journey, the very first chapter, it describes Jesus. And basically describes this, the yin and yang of grace and truth. It doesn't describe Ashton Kutcher. It doesn't on him. We'll get back to him in a little bit. In John chapter 1, 14 to 16, here's what it says about who Jesus was. It says that we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses. Truth, information was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. What this says here is that Jesus came as the yin and yang, basically, of grace and truth. You really can't separate grace and truth. And when you look at Jesus, these are the two things that uniquely sum up who he is and uniquely sum up the life that he offers to us. You know, giving us wisdom and nicety, he's wise and he's nice, but that doesn't give us life. Giving us, you know, counsel and, you know, some good humor, I think he had great humor, had great counsel. That doesn't give us life. You know, giving us just all this bland fact and figures and all these, that doesn't give us life. What gives us life? Grace and truth. When those things go together, there is something powerful that happens. What's truth? Truth. Truth is when perfect information is given. Truth is when perfect information is given. What's grace? Grace is when perfect appreciation is given. Truth is when perfect information is given. Grace is when perfect appreciation is given. Now, just a little exercise. Tell the person next to you which you are better at. Tell them next to you, are you better at giving perfect information or perfect appreciation? Just tell the person next to you, are you a truth person or a grace person? Go ahead, turn to them and tell them. I'm just curious, I've never done this before, and if you don't raise your hand, then you're going to mess up the whole exercise. Just curious, how many of us would say, I am, you know, forced to choose one of two, I am more a truth person? Okay, how many of us would say a grace person? a grace person. Interesting, about 50-50. That's fascinating. 50-50. That's the way a lot of us get into relationships. We think, okay, 50-50, I'm going to do my fair share, you know? 50-50. It doesn't work that way, though, does it? If you ever have a relationship that actually pops, it's not because you do your fair share and it's because it's 50-50. It's because it's 100-100. Because both people bring the fullness of who they are. Both people totally bring their A game all the time, and they step it up and they serve. And Jesus, when he comes in grace and truth, he's not sort of like, I'm half grace, I'm half truth. I am full on 100% industrial truth, and I am full on 100% industrial pure appreciation, pure mercy. Some of us think, well, it's your truth. Isn't Jesus just sort of the loving guy? Well, not really. Not really. Interesting thing about Jesus, when he would interact with people, he would actually go toe-to-toe with some of the religious people, but one of the things he would go toe-to-toe with them on is their standards were too low. He would say, your standards are too low. He'd actually call out things in them that they didn't want to hear. He would say, you know, you heard it say, you know, don't commit adultery. Well, I say to you, when you look at somebody and you want to have sex with them in your mind, you look at them with lust, terms, as far as I'm concerned, you're already filthying yourself. You've committed adultery. It's like he raises the bar in adultery. It's not just, you know, doing the tango. It's like, bam, you know, it's just think about it. And he comes and he says, hey, I know that you want to love each other, but here's what I'm telling you. You got to love your enemies. You want to pray for people who love you? Big whoop. You want to love people who love you? Woohoo! Whoopee. You know, who doesn't love people who love them? Who doesn't pray for people who pray for them? Jesus says, I see, I'm giving you new, higher industrial octane truth. Pray for blessings for people who throw stones at you. Pray for blessings. Pray for their success. Pray for them to financially get ahead. Pray for everything to go. Pray for them. Why? No, you know, don't pray. And I pray, God, that you bring judgment upon that person. I pray that person, you bring condemnation, you bring pennilessness to them, and you bring herpes to them. And that's not what God says to pray. Some of you are going to have to give me grace for what I just said right there. The truth people in here are going, that ain't right, man. You can't be saying that. The truth people in here, you know, grace people, are like, I'm with the grace people. Like, I'll give you grace on that one. That's kind of good. You know, it's funny. That's what he does. He amps these things up in truth. And then grace. Grace, you know, he amps things up in grace. He bears with people that according to their laws, it would have been okay for them to be punished. He appreciates the unique nuances of people's personalities, and he brings people into his circle who are from a wide variety of backgrounds. It's weird. He's got this guy in his midst who eventually betrays him with a kiss. Jesus is not stupid. His name is Judas, this guy who comes and tips off everybody where he is. He's not stupid. Jesus had to have seen this stuff happen in his life, and yet it's strangely silent that for some reason he doesn't take him out the woodshed and spank him. I mean, if I had someone in my circle who was like that and I knew it, I'd be like high octane truth all the time. Wham, 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 wham. But he's just giving him grace. And he just gives this incredible high capacity to love on people. See, there's two extremes of people. There's the extreme of people who are religion, people who are into hedonism. You know, religion and hedonism, kind of two extremes. All of us have slivers of all of that inside of us. Those of us who have religious tendencies in us, we will always err towards the truth side. You know, because that's what religion is. Hit your marks. Do this thing. Go here. Go do that. And then those of us who are in the hedonistic camp, we're always going to err on the, hey, pure appreciation. Hey, man, just have fun. Just relax. Would you, you know, relax and all that stuff. And here's what happens. When you only have one of the two, or when you have 50-50, or when you have 80-20, you don't have life. Your life gets sucked dry. Because when you're all on truth, you're very long on lists, and you're very long in the face. Because sooner or later you realize you cannot hold up to all the information you're trying to give out there. And if you're really high on grace, that's your deal, you're going to find out you're going to be very small in discernment and very small in your mind, and eventually you're going to really hurt yourself. Because can't we just all get along? No, we can't. You know, as in, I'm okay, you're okay. No. No. I'm not okay. I know me. I'm not okay, and neither are you. I know things about me. I know things that if they get a hold of me, I am not okay. I have life. I have life because of what Jesus is doing inside of me, but I do not have truth fully reigning inside of me. This is one of the reasons why many of us are never going to really take a hard look at Jesus, because we have not seen people of grace or people of truth who call themselves Christians. I love that line that Brian had on the DVD from our life groups this last week. I love that line where he said, I think it was Annie Dillard, he mentioned, you know, Christ was so great, and an unfortunate thing, right after Christ leaves, these things called Christians come along and screw everything up. Gandhi said, I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christians. You know, why is that? It's because for some reason, the more religious you tend to get, the more erring on the truth side that you get. And there's not the sense of appreciation for people and appreciation for life. And yet at the same time, when we're only about hedonism, we're only about grace, only about enjoyment, only about cutting people slack, there's no standards. There's no standards. There's nothing that will keep us from hurting ourselves. In the book, The Grace-Truth Paradox, Randy Alcorn, I thought I could like say this myself and make myself sound smart, but I couldn't as good as he does. So I'll just read what he says. He says this, truth is quick to post warning signs and guardrails at the top of a cliff, yet it fails to empower people to drive safely and neglects to help them when they crash. Grace is quick to post ambulances and paramedics at the bottom of the cliff, but without truth, it fails to post warning signs and build guardrails. In so doing, it encourages the very self-destruction it attempts to heal. Truth without grace crushes people and ceases to be truth. Grace without truth deceives people and ceases to be grace. Truth without grace degenerates into judgmental legalism. Grace without truth degenerates into deceitful tolerance. Christ's heart is equally grieved by grace suppression and truth suppression, by grace twisting and truth twisting. Grace and truth are both necessary. Neither is sufficient. Maybe we shouldn't be going after truth or grace. Maybe we should be going after growth. Maybe it's growth. You know, one of the things is grace and truth need to be absorbed. They need to be absorbed. Not going from, you know, one side to the next, but they need to be absorbed. Grace and truth need to be absorbed. And when we have that absorbed into our lives, we come to be healthy, life, lively, flourishing people who just sense that something is growing inside of us and something is awesome. And then as we're in this journey, there's this story that, bam, happens right in the middle of John. Bam. And it's a story that some people say, I don't know if that should be in the book of John, because, you know, it's not in every ancient manuscript. And some people are like, well, it should be in a different book of the Bible. And there's all this kind of debate about where this story should fit. But it is so true to the character of Jesus. If you've read anything about Jesus, it's so true to the character of Jesus. And it is one of the incredible scenarios where he models what it means to be about growth. Where he models, this is how his life is formed, and this is how he actually gives life. Let's take a look at the scripture ourselves, the book of John chapter 8. The teachers of the law, the Pharisees, brought a woman caught in adultery. Teachers of the law, you know what that is? The truth tellers. The truth tellers, the ones that understand all of these rules back here. The teachers of the law, the truth tellers. They bring a woman who's broken the truth, who's committed adultery. They made her stand before the group, and they said to Jesus, Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say? Oh, they put Jesus in a hard spot. I mean, at this point, he's claiming that he and God are one. He's claiming that he reflects all the glory of God. He's claiming that he is the Son of God. He's claimed that he is going to be like the snake that's lifted up on the staff, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, where he's going to go on a cross. And because he is sinless, he's going to live in perfect, perfect truth. He's going to be able to give grace to people. And he's made these profound statements. And now they're going, okay, enough of you. Enough of you, little teacher boy. We're gonna see what you're made of. And so they put him in this place where seemingly he can't get away because he knows that in these old scriptures, there are very clear instructions that adultery is not a good thing and should not happen. And there are punishments. There are consequences to it. So they say to him, what do you say? And so if he says, yeah, you're right, let's stone her. Let's do that. Then they go, oh, aren't you loving? Oh, aren't you so loving that you would do that? If he says, no, don't do that. Say, ah, you just broke truth. You just broke with it. So he's put in this very, very difficult place. And Jesus is so brilliant. He's so brilliant. He's just astounding in his ability to read people and read a situation. He's just fascinating how he deals with people because he knows how people think and he knows how they process things through. And I don't know if he thought of this before or not, but there's this fascinating thing that happens where he just stops the whole conversation. Starts messing in the dirt. See, because he's seen this before. He's seen this. People get stoned regularly. Well, people do get stoned regularly. I'm not talking about that kind of stone, though. People get... I knew that was going to come out at some point. It's probably going to be different every single service this weekend. He's seen people who've gotten stoned. You know? You have too. In fact, maybe you've stoned people. You know, they still do literal stoning over in the Middle East, or at least they did 10, 15 years ago. I had a friend who was had an assignment over in Saudi Arabia. And they saw an actual stoning. Someone caught in adultery and they stoned this person. Except, you know, they've gotten new with technology. Instead of like having all these like individual stones people throw and they have to tear their rotator cuffs and just, you know, hard stuff. Now what they do, at least what he saw, is they actually bring a dump truck. It backs up. Beep, 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 beep. And dead. Gone. Still do it today. We still do it in here. You cheated on your taxes? You're gay? You can tell me I shouldn't be gay and you're not. What movie did you go see? What is that shirt you have on? Don't you dare date him. I think it's going, you know, we've hurled these stones and we felt these stones, haven't we? We've hurled these and we've felt these. We have not purely appreciated the people that God has created. We have not purely appreciated the circumstances that may have led to the very thing that we think is wrong. We have not given grace. And sometimes we have not given truth, and some people have hurt themselves because we've not given truth. As Jesus is down and he's doodling, he's doing something. We're not exactly sure what he's doing. But this is one of the fascinating things about the Bible, how it stands completely by itself against other religious writings. It is completely in a category of its own because it's not just this pure poetic writing. It's not, it is a story. It is communicating a story. It's not religious information in a textbook that gives you an ironclad case for every problem you might have with God. It is the story of God. It is a love letter that goes from the beginning to the end. Whenever I get a new Bible, in fact, I did in this one. I just got a new Bible here. Put in the front, you know, I love you, God. Or right in the beginning, you know, dear Brian. And I put in the back, love God. Because this is a love letter from God. Describes who He is to me and helps me understand how life is supposed to happen. And so you take a look at these other scriptures or of different various religions, and they're cold or they're just very systematic. And then you have in the Bible these things that pop up like, okay, writing. What's going on with the writing? Why am I? We have no idea what's going on with the writing. But someone saw something that changed their life and they wrote it down. John saw something that changed his life, the snare that he saw with Jesus. Grace and truth, growth coming together. It changed his life and he just told the story. C.S. Lewis came to know Christ as a professor of ancient literature at Oxford University. This dude, he read every book that was published in the 16th century, every single one. That was his thing. He would look at ancient literature. And one of the things that brought him to have life in Christ is seeing how the scriptures would unfold in stories like this. Because it's of a genre that's like novelistic that wasn't created for centuries later. Here's what he said. He said this. He said, I've been reading poems, romances, vision, literature, legends, and myths of all my life, and I know what they're like. I know none of them are like this. Of the gospel text, there are only two possible views. Either this is reportage, or else some unknown ancient writer without known predecessors or successors suddenly anticipated the whole technique of modern novelistic realistic narrative. The reader doesn't see this, has simply not learned how to read. It's a little truth he was given right there, you know? Not learn how to read. Something's happening here. It's seared in somebody's mind what it meant to have life. And Jesus says, all you truth tellers, here's the deal. Let he who, he actually stands and says, let he who is without sin, who is fully lived by truth, you, can throw the first stone. And he goes back down and he starts doodling or writing. Now, some people believe that what he's actually doing here is he's actually writing out some of the sins that he's seen and known in the lives of people who were there. So they can actually see, like, you know, this thing that's... Don't really know. All I know is the tension is mounting and he just stops and he says very clearly, hey, live perfectly by truth, you are qualified to condemn this person. And what the scripture says is that one by one, they started dropping their rocks. The oldest first. Why is that? Because the older you are, the more time you've had to do wacky stuff. That's why. The older you are, you know, the more mistakes you've made, the older you are, all that stuff. I mean, you might be getting, maybe you're making less mistakes this year than you did in year 16, but you made more. There's more and more and more and more, more and more going on. They drop their stones and walk away. It's incredible. Incredible. He looks at the woman and he says this. In John, verse 10, Jesus straightened up and he asked her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, sir, she said. Then neither do I condemn you, Jesus declared. Go now and leave your life of sin. This woman, he doesn't call her by her sin. He doesn't identify her as adulterous woman, person, the one who I appreciate completely for who you are. Has nobody chose to condemn you right now? No. Neither do I. Now, this is fascinating. When he says, neither do I, you know what he's saying? I'm the one person who could still be holding my rock. I'm the one person who is uniquely qualified to stone you. Because the gauntlet he laid out is that he who was without sin dropped the first stone. You know, of all the things that have been written about Jesus by people who by people who are Christ followers, by people who are not Christ followers, by people who are agnostics or people who are atheists. I've never seen, read, or heard anything of anybody said that accused him or specifically found him having ever broken truth. I mean, there's nothing of any written record, historical record, that indicates that anybody felt like he broke truth other than some of the religious people who thought that he was too graceful. And so here's this guy, the one guy that is uniquely qualified to cast a stone. And he says, neither do I condemn you. I don't condemn you. You know, what would it take for us to have grace and truth absorbed in our life? And what would it take for us to actually apply grace and truth? Grace and truth needs to be absorbed, and grace and truth needs to be applied. It needs to be applied to our life. You ever notice how many untruths you and I say? You ever notice this? We'll say things like, well, there's a preacher friend of mine tipped me off on this. It's brilliant how his reasoning went. We say things like, well, you know what? She just needs a friend. She just needs a friend. Okay, even though I'm married, you know, she just needs a friend over there. Interesting, you know, Bertha needs a friend too. Bertha needs a friend. How come you're picking her for a friend? You know, Grandma at the front desk, she needs a friend. How come all the people who need friends to you are really good-looking women that you're not married to? Well, he just needs a friend. See, we can't even speak really what is on our heart. Or here's one we say things like, well, I just got that car because it's just a safe car. It's just a safe car. And yes, it must be so safe. And of course, safe cars are always very expensive. It's so safe that the people who we love, we don't let them drive it. I'm sorry, no, you can't drive that car. I'm sorry, you know, you want to go out in your prom. No, you got to drive the old Malibu is what you got to take. You can't be taking, you know, this. But it's a safe car. That's why I bought it. Okay. Things like, well, you know, why, health reasons. That's why I had that procedure done. Health reasons, because, you know, hey, man, you went to a plastic surgeon because you want to look better. Not health reasons. Went to a plastic. Here's one. I've done this one. Part of my thing on grace and truth, all of us have this, is sometimes, because I tend to err on the truth side, I tend to not even give myself grace. I tend to stone myself. It's why, like, weird, sick thing for me. A couple weeks ago, I talked about iPod. I had to go to great pains to help everyone know that I did not buy an iPod. Someone gave it to me. So they didn't want anybody thinking that, like, I'm doing something funny with my money or something like that. Weird. I'm sick. I am. I got problems. That's one of the things. I don't give myself grace, you know. And so Lib and I moved in a new house a couple years ago, and we were it was a bigger house than we were in, that we had been in. Great house, big, you know, big house. Not a huge house. A lot of people's houses are larger, but good size house, bigger house. So I found myself going, you know, Libby's got the gift of hospitality. She's got the gift of hospitality, and we have to have people over and entertain. And so that's why we need the space. We need to entertain, you know. As if, like, people are going, oh, so it's for Jesus you have a big house then. Really, it's Jesus. And I say, hey, we wanted a nice house of some size. Sometimes I can't even bring ourselves to say that kind of truth and grace. Can you speak truth about yourself? Can you see yourself? Can you say who you are really? Can you say, I like to drive German cars? What's wrong with that? Give yourself some grace. I got a thing for that person I shouldn't have a thing for, and I need you to help me out because I don't want to fall in that. What's wrong with that? I sometimes will do anything I can to make myself feel better or look better, and I'm not sure if what's right and what isn't, but I just know something I wrestle with. Okay? I like having a big, nice house. See, until we can really start to speak truth and give grace to ourselves in those things, we can't do it for anybody else. We can't turn around and offer that up. The Tucson Gem Exhibit. This happened a number of years ago. I have all these, you know, geological rocks and gems and different things that are out, the people have mined and have, and it's kind of like a flea market. And so this geological professor was going through the thing, and he sees this one rock, and it's for $15, and he asks the person, he sees it, and he says, I'll give you $10 for this rock. And the guy says, okay, sold, buys it for $10. Here's what this guy knew that the guy who was selling the rock did not know. This was a natural star sapphire, 2,098 carats. 800 carats more than the largest previously discovered sapphire. Over $2 million. He saw it for $15. He talked him down to $10. And he knew all along that it was a priceless gem. How it got there, nobody knows. Where it was, grandma found it out on a hiking trip one day and kind of stuck it in a box and generations later. No one has any idea. But here's what we know. We know this, that somebody who is uniquely qualified to notice the value of something paid it honor. You know, when I have troubles with people who are bothering me, when I put my truth hat on and I see things I don't like and I want to go after it, when I have a hard time with offering grace and appreciation, you know what I oftentimes think of? And this is so simplistic for some of us, this almost sounds like basic Sunday school, but yet it's so good and so true. Every person that you see is a gem, because every person is a person that Jesus died for. Every person you see is somebody that Jesus offered truth and grace to the point where he died for them, because he went to the perfect point of living a sinless, truthful life and appreciating and giving grace by going on a cross. And every single person you see is a gem to God. You know who that includes? You. You. You are a gem. You are a bona fide, priceless, one-of-a-kind person that God appreciates, and he wants to breathe life into us. He wants us to flourish. He wants us to experience the way his creation is always meant to function, because you are his unique gem that he has created. I want to invite Mandy to come up, who sang that song earlier, and Todd and Josh as well, because I want to kind of talk through some things that relate to this whole, you know, grace and truth thing. Because there's two things that I want you to do today. There's two things. Number one, I want you to drop your rocks. I want you to drop your rocks. And the second thing is, I want you to do what this woman does. She walks away. All the people who are erring on the side of truth and judging, they drop their rocks and walk away. And this woman who is not having truth, maybe erring on the side of grace in her life, she walks away from her life of sin. Why does she do that? Does she do that because Jesus guilted her into it? You must never do this again. No, you know why it is? Because when you realize that I am a gem that God has died for, and the person who would uniquely condemn me is choosing not to condemn me, something triggers inside of you, and you don't want some of that stuff that you used to have before. You don't want to do some of those things that you used to do before. Some of those things that you and I are doing that are kind of sucking the life out of us, we think are the things that are giving us life. They're not. They're sucking the life out of us. And we think, oh, I can't give that up. Whenever you start to think that way, you know that you have not experienced the life giver, because when the life giver breathes life into you, you come to this place where you say, I don't want those things. I don't want that sand. We turn around and walk away. Mandy. How are you?
I'm good. And
good,
you?
Good, Mandy. Everyone say hi to Mandy.
Hi.
How many of us want to sing Barry Manilow, Oh Mandy, right now? That's what I want to know.
Thank you.
That was not practiced
either.
That's
the first time I've ever heard that song, actually.
Todd actually used to play at a piano bar.
So you got
name a song right now, any song.
Blue Eyes by Elton John. Gotcha.
Oh, Todd, come on.
No tip for you, Todd.
Amanda, you are you're in a life group.
Yes.
What's going on in your life in the midst of your life group and everything?
Oh, all kinds of little things that are culminating into larger discoveries in my life. But one thing that I've really been focusing on, particularly in my experiences right now, is the whole image of the light that we talked about a few weeks ago, and how that plays out in my life.
Actually, hand me that Bible right there, will you? Because I just keep talking.
Okay, thank you. and just coming to the realization through our group that I may be potentially the only experience that somebody will ever have with the light, the only light they will ever see, the light being the truth that God has allowed me to share with Him. So many people have seen the light, but it's been through this filter that person has put on themselves. And so it's been a distorted view of the light. And because of that, those people have a bad taste in their mouth now, and they have stereotypes that they have developed, rightly so, because that's what was communicated to them. And
did you realize that the very next sentence in this is about that? Did you realize that?
I did not.
Verse 12,
I'd like to say that I did, but
when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life."
Yeah.
Interesting. Ties right into the story.
It is. It's very, you know, and I can decide. It's a decision I make every day.
So you feel like you get more life through the series?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Through my responses in my life, in my everyday experiences, I make a conscious decision. Every time I respond to something in my life, whether it's a remark someone makes to me or just how I'm doing my work, how I respond, I have an opportunity to show maybe this much light, or maybe I want to shine it full on and pray and hope that people see that light through me and see the truth through me and see Jesus in me.
That's good.
Yeah. So
full
awesome.
On truth and grace.
Yeah.
Groove.
Full on, shining the high beams.
Yeah. Why don't we, let's pray right now, okay? You know, the Bible communicates stories because stories are pictures that we can have in our mind for spiritual formation, for God to form us. I'd like you to identify right now something in your life that is untruthful. Something in your life that's untruthful. A sin in your life, a rebellious area. And if you can't identify anything, then your area is self-deception. That's your area. And everybody in this place has found out about it. Everybody's found out about it. We just know. And in walks Jesus, kneeling down, in the midst of you being busted. What do you say to Jesus? Just say that to him right now. In the quietness of your heart, what do you say to him? I was just looking at this, and I realized that this is I have a lot of Bibles. This is a very unique one, though. It's a unique one because it has all the pages in it. I've gotten into this habit over the years of as I'm interacting with somebody, if I'm sensing there's some death and some hurt and there's something in here that gives life, I go, "Oh, you got to read this." And I go and I actually rip out the whole page and say, "Take this home. Take this home. This is yours." I was thinking about this the other day when Beam and I were, that's Brian Wells, this is my term of endearment for him. We were talking about something and we went to the Bible to find this one thing. I pulled off this Bible off my desk. And I said, "Okay, it must be the next page." It was like, there was no page there. It was gone. I was like, "Oh, I gave that one away. I couldn't do it." And here's the one I gave away. It was from Romans, book of Romans, chapter 8, where it says that those who are in Jesus, that means not those who are in some religion, who have him as the center, but those who are in Jesus, who have a relationship with him, are having life spring up. Those who are in Christ Jesus, there is therefore now no condemnation. No condemnation. You know what you never have to worry about? You never have to worry about Jesus calling you out in front of people and hurling something at you. You don't have to worry about that today. If you're you're in a relationship with Him. You don't have to worry about that tomorrow. You don't have to worry about that if you die. That's life. No fear, no sense of condemnation. It's life. And I so you know, next week, in Easter service, we're going to have a little moment next week where some of us, maybe for the first time, are going to really go from death to life. God, thank You for every person in here and every sense of appreciation that's in this place. We just appreciate who everybody is in here right now. All of the incredible things in their life, all the things that aren't so incredible. Thank You, Jesus, that You modeled it for us. It's in the name of You that I pray. Amen. All right, got an hour and a half.